Hello and welcome to Walkley Talks. I'm James Gorman from the Walkley Foundation for Journalism. Here we share discussions about the craft and importance of journalism in Australia and the world, often recorded at our events. Today's podcast is from our Regional Journalism Summit held earlier in 2022. Who is investing in regional journalism? This industry panel examines what the established players in regional Australian news are doing, covering media diversity in regional areas, legislation, regulation, and sustainability. Regional excellence, the changing face of regional Australia, career paths, and support for young journalists and emerging leaders in regional media. This talk was recorded as part of the Walkley Regional Journalism Summit on February 10.
Thanks so much, Lisa, for that kind introduction. Hello and welcome, everybody, from Gadigal land, where J&I is located, to the next session in the Walkley Foundation's Regional Journalism Summit. And I really hope you've had a chance to enjoy some of the sessions and keynote speeches so far. J&I, as Lisa said, is a supporter of regional journalism in Australia, and I just want to share some words from J&I's submission last week to the Federal Parliament's inquiry into Australia's regional newspapers. Regional and local media is a critical element of the media landscape in Australia, and it's clearly associated with the broader civic engagement and democratic health of communities. Large publications do not have the resources or mandate to investigate matters of local importance. So I think that that really tells you something about how we feel about the discussion which is going on today. News media, as we know, is in the midst of disruption. The market's seen significant change in competition, technology, distribution, audience behaviours, revenue, the whole lot. And in regional media, I think it's fair to say we have definitely felt a lot of those winds of change. So this afternoon's panel, Who is Investing in Regional Journalism?, is going to examine what the established players in regional Australian news are doing. Here in this virtual Zoom room with us today are three senior leaders from Australia's three biggest regional news media publishers, Wind News, Australian Community Media, and the ABC. So this is your opportunity to hear firsthand about the direction of their businesses, their operational landscape, which includes hurdles but also opportunities, and what sort of journalism they're making now and pursuing in coming years. Most of all, it's your chance to ask questions, so please do drop your questions into the chat at any time. If you get in early while the conversation's running, and if I catch your comment, I'll try to weave it in. But you can also save up your questions for the end, because we do have plenty of time towards the end to ask questions. Now I'd like to introduce our panellists for today. Stella Laurie, give us a wave, Stella, is the National News Director of Australia's largest regional TV news service, Wind News. The network services more than 8 million people through 17 news bureaus and more than 80 news staff across Australia. Stella is responsible for 13 half-hour news bulletins each weeknight and more than 100 news updates a day. She's also a member of the Walkley Judging Board. Hi, Stella.
Thanks, Andrea.
Thanks. Hugh Martin is the head of Regional, Rural and Emergency at the ABC, where he oversees journalism and broadcasting output from 46 bureaus across regional Australia. In addition to radio programming and TV news, Hugh's teams produce digital stories and feature video content for local, national and international audiences. Hello there, Hugh. G'day.
Hey, Andrea.
And Rod Quinn is the editorial director of Australian Community Media, Australia's largest independent media company. ACM employs 600 journalists and publishes more than 150 newspapers and websites across Australia. Rod led the editorial team of ACM during a major transformation program that helped to lay the foundations for a business that now generates significant digital subscription revenue. G'day, Rod.
G'day, Andrea.
Nice to see all three of you. Now, this is a subject very close to my heart because I started my career as a broadcast journalist in Tamworth in regional New South Wales, where we should have been today, and I've worked in a number of other regional locations as well. So I've got a very deep and abiding interest in media that serves regional and also outer suburban communities. Now, each of you is established in your area, and what you do continues to do the bulk of regional journalism. So I know that you've got a lot of insight to share. But I just want to kick off today, if I might, with a little bit of an icebreaker just to help our audience get a sense of your connection to regional media and regional audiences. If you could each just give us a brief recollection of your just an outstanding regional experience that you had when you were a journalist or a frontline editor, something that really left an impression on you. And Stella, I might start with you.
Thanks, Andrea. Well, if there's anyone on the Wynn News team listening on this, they'll know about the Port Kembla boat ramp story. That's what we initiate all journalists with. And it's really my entry into journalism as a work experience kid back in the early 90s and wanting to sink my teeth into a story and grabbing hold a public notice on a friend's fridge and seeing that fishermen in the Illawarra really wanted a new boat ramp. So I went along to the community meeting, fast forward 8 years, worked my way through the ranks, becoming a journalist, then chief of staff of that newsroom, and finally the state government calling me and saying I've been such a pain that they will hand me that multi-million dollar check to give to the fishermen of the Illawarra, and they'll get their boat ramp. And I'll never forget the day reception called and there were the fishermen of the Illawarra all at reception with fish, seafood baskets for the offering to thank Wynn News for starting that campaign and seeing it through to fruition. And this is pretty much what my journalists do day in, day out. And we call it the Port Kembla Boat Ramp Initiation. But this is what we do, from paediatric services to schools to maternity wards, to infrastructure. That's what we do each day, and that was my start.
Outstanding local story, Stella. Thank you. Rod, what's your story?
Well, there's nothing like a good campaign, as Stella says, but my recollection is not as fond a memory, if you like, because it goes back to 2003 when I was editing the Newcastle Herald. And we actually broke our printing press on a big edition for a Saturday morning, and it meant we couldn't print the paper. So there was no Newcastle Herald on the streets that day. And, of course, we all rushed into the office to see whether we could try and control the situation. And the phone was ringing, and we had people ringing up saying, I can't have a shower. And we would say, well, that's funny because we're not the water board, this is the Herald. And they'd say, no, you don't understand. I can't have a shower until I've read my Newcastle Herald, and I haven't got my Newcastle Herald. So it really brought home to me, with the volume of calls and the kind of responses that we had, just how important what we did was to that community.
Great story of a showstopper. Thank you, Rod. And Hugh, a story from you.
Hard to beat those two. Look, for me, it was a slightly different experience. I came from capital city newspapers and moved to regional media in the early 2000s. And something that really resonated, well, it made a huge impact on me and stayed with me ever since, was a conversation I had with our general manager in Rockhampton. I was working for the APN newspapers as they were then. In Rockhampton, Simon Irwin is his name. I think he works for Beef Australia now. He's a terrific chap and a really great old school general manager for newspapers. And he said, he looked me up and down when I came into the office, and he could clearly tell I was a city boy. And he said, look, you know, if you want to get ahead in Queensland, you can't do business on the phone. You've got to go and you've got to sit opposite people and have a conversation. And he added a few colourful words that sort of helped illustrate his point. But really what he was saying is that the face-to-face, the community aspect of the journalism and the media that we do in regional Australia can't be done remotely, can't be done by distance. It has to be about people. It has to be about personal interaction. And when you do that and you do it well, you get results. And that's something that, certainly coming from southern states and being kind of wowed by the size and the scale of Queensland and the distribution, sort of the distributed nature of the markets up there, it made me think, well, how do you get around and do that? But that's part of the investment. That's part of the effort that regional media, regional journalists go to every day, drive long distances, travel and talk to people face to face. And when you do that and you do it day in, day out, you connect with audiences in a meaningful way. And so that's something that's that I've really tried to follow through on as best I can.
Thank you. And thanks all three of you for your stories. I think it helps our audience today get a sense of what your connection is for the topic today, because we're going to touch on as quickly as we can a lot of quite big issues about the structure and the way that media works in regional areas today and where you are making choices to take it into the future. So I might ask each of you now if you would just give me a quick snapshot of where your business, your media business is right now. So in broad terms, can you describe the trends that you're seeing in your operations? What directions are you travelling in terms of audience, your output, your people? And just to maybe give you a bit of a scale to work with. Are you seeing growth? Are things stable? Are you seeing a contraction? Or are you seeing a transformation? And it could be a combination of any of those. So, Hugh, I might start with you.
Thanks, Andrea. Look, I think there's a number of things that are happening at the moment. One is we've seen a change in the way that audiences are responding in regional media because of the COVID effect. Partly over the last couple of years, it's to do with the movement of people around the regions, the lack of movement in many ways, and the engagement with media and information as a result of the need and the desire to find out, you know, what's happening and the anxiety levels that have been part of that. On a broader level, at the ABC, we are trying to get to more places than we've been previously. We celebrated 75 years of rural last year, as the ABC's, you know, been in regional Australia for a long time. Our audiences are speaking loudly to us daily about the value that they see the ABC bringing, and that's something we want to continue to build on. And we're looking to do in places that we haven't been to before. So we're opening up some new reporter locations. And a couple of mini bureaus as well in some places in each state that the ABC has not been at before. A lot of training as well, and a lot of other things too. But I won't hog the microphone. I'm sure there's more to add.
And Rod, how are things looking for ACM?
Well, in terms of growth, contraction, or stabilisation, I guess it's a bit of everything, Andrea. But I think I probably should start by saying we are in a hugely challenged environment. We are seeing big drops in revenue as a result of the COVID effect. We've had to suspend papers. So the last 2 years have been diabolical. There's probably no other word for it. And we've just made a very extensive submission to the parliamentary inquiry into regional media that sets out the position pretty frankly. On the other side of the ledger, though, we are seeing growth in digital subscriptions, which is really heartening across our portfolio of dailies and some of our other bigger titles. And I guess, you know, there's glimmers of hope in some areas of the advertising market. We're doing what we can to put a lot of work into a property vertical, for example. We're starting new products in some markets that have been vacated by News Corp. So a couple of examples of that are the Northern Beaches and the Inner West in Sydney, as well as Lismore. We've got a new paper up there. So, you know, there are some hopeful signs, but I have to say, not to be downbeat, but the overall picture is very challenging.
Before I move to you, Stella, just to pick up on a point there, Rod, that you mentioned about revenues, what's keeping the lights on? Is the business of journalism paying for you, or is it something else?
Oh, it's the revenue. What's keeping the lights on is a combination of things. It's it remains advertising revenue predominantly, cover price revenue, digital subscription revenue. So there are revenue from other sources, but what we're seeing is big drops over, say, the last 5 years in those revenues. We're talking numbers that, say, 45% drops in revenue in print over that time. So it's not to say that there's not revenue. There's still revenue there, but we're having to reshape our business to meet the new reality.
Thanks, Rod. And Stella, what's the trend that you're seeing at Wynn, and what's keeping the lights on?
Well, what's keeping the lights on is an extremely passionate owner and company, and Wynn News has always been the jewel in the crown of the Wynn network, but it is tough. The future of regional broadcasters is dire, and I speak directly to the federal government and the Minister for Communications, Paul Fletcher, when I say we need change, we need things looked at, and we need it now. I understand the handouts, I understand the journalism funds that are available, where we can't tap into much of that. It costs $1 million to run a newsroom and a bureau a year, and we have 12 bureaus across Australia. a lot of the funding we receive gets us across the line for a couple of months, 6 months at best, but it is extremely tough, and it's time, and we're in an election year, and we have got to put the pressure on now to get some really serious investment back into regional media and then regional broadcasters to keep them afloat.
Thanks, all three of you. One of the things that occurs to me about media that's been around for some time, established media, is that you had an existing relationship with audiences and an existing business on your particular platforms well before the digital disruption came about. So in other words, you're probably still riding two horses, the way you used to do things for the audiences who like it that way and the way that you need to do things in the future for the audiences who want that now. How's that two-horse race going for you, and where do you see yourself moving to in the next sort of 2, 3, 5 years, Stella?
Well, free TV and eyeballs at 5:30 is what will keep us alive always, and that's first and foremost where we need to concentrate our business. We're talking about drought, fire, flood, cyclone, COVID-affected rural and regional communities across Australia, and many of them are large cities. And we've all seen where they go to when times are tough. And free-to-air television still needs to be that platform. There still needs to be that investment in it. And 5:30 p.m. time slot for me is what will keep me going. It's tuning into that digital side, but that is really just a mechanism. It's not what will keep us afloat. What will keep us afloat is the business model with free-to-air television.
Thanks. What does that look like for you, Hugh?
Well, we've spent a considerable amount of time and effort in the last 4 to 5 years transforming what were radio stations in regional, ABC radio stations in regional Australia, into what we call multi-content newsrooms now, so multi-content platform bureaus. So I guess the progression there is from a traditional radio model to a mixed model of radio and digital and video for news and online. The challenge from a legacy to a mixed model is that radio in regional Australia, it relies on reach, on transmission reach, and the transmission technology that we've been using for 80-odd years is getting old. And the reliability of digital infrastructure to deliver radio services and other digital services in remote and regional parts of Australia just isn't really there. So, I mean, I can tell you I've driven in the last 4 days, I've driven up through central west of New South Wales, up to Bourke and back down through Dubbo and Wagga to Ballarat today. And along the way, you cannot rely on a 4G connection, even on the main highway. So you get off the main highways, you've got nothing really. Now that's a safety issue for many people living in that part of the country, but it's also very central to how we can deliver 21st century media services. So that's something that we've really got to solve.
Unmute myself first, shouldn't I? I saw you nodding there, Rod. Where are you and ACM's business with this?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that making the transition from print to digital has been a huge challenge for traditional print newsrooms, and our workforce, our journalists, have really taken up that challenge, and I'm in awe, really, of what our journalists have achieved in recent years in adapting to not just having to serve our really loyal print audience, but to serve new platforms and different forms of content. And, a bit like you, we are adapting our newsrooms to not only publish digital first, but also moving into areas like audio and video and audience engagement techniques and other areas like that. I think, though, if we turn our thoughts to the future, inevitably we're going to see, I think, across the sector, more rationalisation of titles. I can't at this stage see, without some federal government support or intervention along the lines of some recommendations we've made in our submission to the government, without some sort of support, there has to be rationalisation. One of the things that will affect the whole sector is a massive forthcoming increase in newsprint prices. So that's the single biggest input to our business after labour costs. And that's going to go up by more than 30% from the 1st of July. So to put that in context, that's more than the salaries of 50 journalists put together. Mm. So the hits keep coming, I have to say, around that. And I guess, though, on the other side, on the digital side, we have to move more of our revenue to digital, and we have to make better use of things like data and move into areas, the areas that interest me are personalisation, for example. You know, if you look 5 years down the track, I think we'd be looking at much more use of data, much more personalisation, perhaps a bit of AI mixed in there as well. So
I'm going to come to the personalisation and new technologies right down the end and a little bit more quickly to media regulation, because I think that that's become a very live issue in the last short while. But just before we do, Caleb has made a little note that when he started at the ABC 19 years ago, the kind of problem that we talked about then was pretty much the same as now, that two-horse race. What is it that's caused this to be such a slow transition? Has it been shifting your own internal infrastructure? Has it been about supporting services such as lack of good 4G, 5G, other internet services? Is it the audience? What is it that you need to change in order to get you to the future faster? Anybody?
I think you've got to bring the audience along with you. So I think it's fine to skill, increase skills and capabilities around publishing online. But the audience has got to be there, and the audience is definitely growing. And not only that, the audience is showing more of a propensity to pay for that content, because we're a revenue-driven model. We have to get money for our content, and the heartening thing is more people are prepared to pay for it online.
I'll throw in another observation. I agree with what Rod's just said, but for radio, particularly in regional Australia, cars... consumption of radio in cars is so important. And because of the reach of AM and to a lesser extent FM transmission, that's something that's been able to be sustained quite considerably. Once you start looking at digital audio and app-based consumption of radio in cars outside of the capital cities, it becomes a real issue. But interestingly, cars are not being made with AM radio receivers so much anymore. We don't have a local car industry, and a lot of European cars that are going to start coming into the country in the next few years won't have AM receivers. So that's going to be a big problem for the radio industry to grapple with, and we need to deal with that from a regional point of view. But broadly speaking, AM was a hugely successful technology. And specifically for the ABC, in the emergency season, it's still something we rely on very, very heavily. I mean, as you know well, Andrea, the importance of AM radio during emergency broadcast around fire or floods is crucial, as television is, of course, too, and increasingly digital will become more important, but AM is kind of the last thing that gets turned off when you leave the house, and it's the first thing that gets turned on when you get in the car. So we haven't got an easy replacement for that in that circumstance yet. That's just one example.
In terms of television, when you're talking about infrastructure and the importance and, you know, emergencies, Wind Television, for example, upkeeps more than 350 transmitters across the country. We maintain them. We deliver services through them. We pay exorbitant taxes for them. That's called the spectrum fees. It's something that we've been lobbying hard to get reduced. It's an antiquated system. However, it's our responsibility to do that, to have these transmitters. And you know, you look at fires and things when transmitters go down, we're talking about information. We're talking about information being delivered to the regional communities, those who need to hear the information. And that infrastructure is extremely important, but that infrastructure also needs to be maintained. And that comes at a huge cost.
Yeah, I hear you. You can hear that this is something that established media have to deal with, is that responsibility to the audience on those existing platforms, and it seems as though that's still got some unpicking to come. Let's turn to media regulation now. And this week the federal government released a media policy statement, which has arisen from the green paper that they released in 2020 and subsequent consultation out of that. It's a hot topic on everybody's lips, as anybody who was tuned in very early would have heard a little bit of back channel chat there about that. The statement outlined a range of measures that a couple of them specifically called out to regional media, including extending the transitional support for eligible commercial regional broadcasters for another 2 years. I'm looking at you, Stella. as part of that plan to modernise TV services, $10 million to support public interest journalism in the regions by hiring new cadets and upskilling current journos in a co-contribution arrangement. Must be something in that for you there, Rod. And also removing the indexation freeze on ABC and SBS funding, although accompanied by a statement of expectations, including very detailed reporting on the ABC's rural and regional operations. I'm looking at you there, Hugh. We are fast coming up to an election. What do you make of this policy statement, number one? And number two, what does your organisation want from whichever party forms the next government? I'm looking at you, Stella, nodding your head there. I might start with you.
It just doesn't speak to regional broadcasters. It all sounds good, but it's not going to keep us alive. It just won't. It's a band-aid solution. It's not even a solution. It's a temporary handout, and it's not what's going to keep us alive well into the future. It's simple. We've sat down over many years and spoken to many communications ministers and leaders of the parties. It's spectrum fees that are choking us, that are killing us. It's up to 20% of our company profits that we can invest back into the business. It's a double tax. Australia's paying more in spectrum fees for regional broadcasters than any other country in the world. We need them gone. There's no need for them. That's a lot of money that we can invest back into the business. And I can't understand why that can't happen. Well, I can. It's a tax. It's put back into the government's coffers. I get that. But we need to keep the regional broadcasters alive. This won't do it. This paper does not speak to us. This paper nowhere near speaks to regional broadcasters.
So a pretty clear statement of what you want and what you're not getting right now. Thanks, Stella. Rod, where are you on this?
Andrea, I think, I'd say it's a welcome move. It's a step in the right direction without going, too overboard with it. We're never going to say no to an opportunity for support. But it does. I agree with Stella. I think it's on the thin end, I guess, of the spectrum there. I would like to see, and we would like to see, deeper reform. I think we need the federal government to really take a hard look at the regional publishing sector in our case, because as we've said in our submission to the inquiry, this sector is in real peril. There's no ifs or buts here. This is serious. Newsprint's about to go up massively. That will affect every publisher. So we are not asking for, a second round of emergency funding. We actually don't want to run our business based on government handouts. We want to get to a stable business model where, we've made that transition and we can move into the future. But we believe that there is a place for tax rebates on newsprint, for example, to help publishers through this, to help all publishers through this. We believe that there is room for tax rebates for local advertisers. So small and medium businesses in regional Australia should be able to get a tax rebate to advertise in their local print publication. Again, a move that would lift all boats. I think that there should be a minimum federal government ad spend. The federal government spends a lot of money advertising. Setting some minimum spends across regional publishers would help. And finally, they need to change the media laws, the media ownership laws. They're just a joke. That's where we're coming from.
I'm impressed. That's quite a list, actually. That's a really good claim, a statement of claim, and it'll be interesting to see what you get out of the next election. Now, Hugh, the ABC, it's a peculiar case, isn't it? But something very specific this week for you.
Yes, and look, we are different, obviously, to the commercial media organisation. I'd just like to commend Rod and his team on the statement that was published in their papers yesterday. I think it did outline very well that and summarise the position that they put to the government. And look, I think the theme here for us as the public service broadcaster in the mix with the commercial media organisations is that we want to be able to help. We collectively want to be able to help ourselves do a better job. We don't want to be all sort of beholden to another master, whether that's a political master or a commercial handout. It's about having a healthy industry and a thriving industry for for regional audiences everywhere, and to be able to sustain that. Specifically, though, for the ABC in this particular announcement, I think the one thing that there would be agreement on is actually changing the triennial funding cycle from a 3-year cycle to a 5-year cycle. Leaving aside quantums of money and specifics, just take it out of the election cycle, so that it's not always a football, and it is every time. The only reason it isn't this year is because somebody's made the calculation that that things are too hot and too close. Let's just get it off the table. But in another situation, that wouldn't have happened. So I think if we were to put it on a 5-year cycle and it became something that was dealt with separately, then there would be a lot more ability to get on and do the business of regional media and regional journalism that we want to do.
Thank you. It's good to get a sense of what all three of your organisations need. We've talked a bit of what's been mentioned in your answers, the falling ad revenue, particularly for the two of you for whom that is your source of income. But there has been an opportunity for some of that ad revenue, which has gone elsewhere, effectively to the big tech companies to come back. And that's been the introduction of the Mandatory News Media Bargaining Code, which was enacted last year. Now, so far, Google and Facebook have been striking deals without referring to the code arbitration. They've been doing those directly. So I'd like to know, what result has this delivered for your organisations? Have you negotiated payment? How much? And what have you done with that money? Rod?
Well, have we negotiated payment? Yes. How much? Not telling. And what are we doing with it? Well, it's enabling us to do some really good things. So obviously the figures are commercial in confidence. But what I'd say about the news media bargaining code is that it was the outcome of extensive and productive consultation. It was a good result. We haven't actually had to enact the provisions of the code. We've had really productive talks with Facebook and Google. But the outcome, I guess, around that, while what we've got there is fair and very welcome, it's less than 5% of our total revenue. So it's not a massive part of the future in terms of revenue. But things like, you know, our deal with Google has enabled us to hire 10 trainees across Australia. And you know, they'll be on board for a year and they'll get a great training experience from us. So you know, the deal is enabling us to do some stuff like that, which is bringing journalists in at the ground level, as well as supporting our journalism through the funding.
Stella?
Yeah, again, hasn't done much for us in terms of a regional setting. I can see the incentive for our metropolitan counterparts and how they can benefit from, but for us, where we don't have catch-up TV or streaming services or anything like that, and a lot of the initiatives that are part of that bargaining code aren't relevant to us as a regional broadcaster, we have not seen the benefits.
And Hugh?
Well, we're slightly different in that the Managing Director, David Anderson, made it very clear last year in a number of public statements that the ABC would spend the money that came through this this piece of legislation and the arrangements out of that on public interest journalism in regional Australia. And that's what he's followed through on. And we're in the process of looking at a number of new jobs around regional Australia. I'm, you know, delighted to be able to say that. I think it's an exciting opportunity for young reporters and regional communities. And the way we've approached this is to look at places where we are, for want of a better word, we're confronted with news deserts. So places that are no longer have a good source of or an available source of local news and information for that community. There might have been a closure of a newsroom. There might never have been a good local media source there. And we're trying to look at how we can populate some of those places with one or two reporters. It's not massive injections into individual locations. We're trying to spread this in as even a way as we can. We'll never get everywhere because there are, you know, vast country, vast number of locations. But we're trying to pick a few, measure them over a first year, try and test and see what is working from an impact point of view, and then look at how we can either continue that or move to another place where there might be, you know, another positive outcome that could be gotten from having a reporter or a couple of reporters. So we're not starting up radio stations. We're not starting up that sort of model. It's really single or dual reporters covering news and local information, filing to their nearest bureau, probably doing some radio packages, crosses to TV, digital articles, that sort of thing, and trying to get that for local audiences, make it a meaningful outcome for local audiences, but also taking some of those stories to national platforms as well.
Thank you. Three distinctly different reflections, actually. And for those of you who are quite interested in this topic, it's pretty live in a global sense right now. So just to let you know, Jay and I has a visiting journalist in residence at the moment, Bill Gruskin, formerly Wall Street Journal and Columbia Journalism School. And he is looking directly at the media bargaining code nearly a year on now with some analysis and potentially some advice to other media organisations and governments who are looking at this situation in Australia as a petri dish to see what might happen around the world. We're going to come to your questions in about 10 minutes' time. Some questions are popping up on my other screen here. Keep them coming through. Pop them into the chat. But it would be remiss of me in this forum not to at least acknowledge that each of you work for organisations whose regional services have come under different kinds of criticism in very recent years, and to give you the opportunity to answer some of your critics. So I might go first to you, Stella, for WIN News. Cuts to WIN services have been very widely reported in recent years, but most recently last year, WIN announced the amalgamation of regional news bulletins, making them statewide in Victoria and Queensland, with consolidation of some of the bulletins in New South Wales, which led to a loss of journalism jobs. How do you answer your critics around this?
Well, if the critics are internally, in terms of our industry, I'd like to say we need the support. We need your support in trying to make sure that this doesn't happen. The alternative was to switch off, and that's how dire our industry is. And I need to paint that picture, and I've been hearing your speakers throughout this forum and Adam Portelli and everything that the MEAA has found. It's all true, but it's a vicious cycle. We need to invest back into journalism. We need to invest back into regional news, but we have got a very strained business model in terms of the support that we don't get from the federal government. And I'm going to go back to that time and time again, because they don't hear us. They don't see us. They're very quick to come to our regions. They're very quick to throw us that media release and make sure we turn up to those announcements. But we need that support. So, yes, we did restructure the business across Queensland and Victoria, and it was a necessary business thing to do to keep us alive, to keep us afloat, because we are struggling to find ways to keep operating under this business model. It just comes down to the support that we need. They're telling us, everybody's telling us, it's important. Regional news is important. Diverse media journalism is important, but we need that backing, and we need the industry to support each other as well. Don't report on newsrooms closing down and restructures happening. Report on the reasons why and report what's needed to make sure that doesn't happen in the future. That's what we need.
Thanks, Stella. Rod, the ACM decided to suspend printed newspapers for dozens of regional towns, more than half your titles in 2020 as the pandemic really took hold. And a handful of those haven't returned. And ACM, as we know, has been named in the current government inquiry into print and digital newspapers. Now, last year, Guardian Australia reported that ACM had received just over $10 million in funding under the Public Interest News Gathering federal grant program. How does ACM answer criticism for receiving grant money on the one hand while reducing print newspapers on the other?
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. It's a good question, and I'm happy to answer it. I'd go back, though, to when the pandemic hit and the very quick decisions that we had to make because our business was in jeopardy. So we had to suspend a number of titles. Unfortunately, we had to stand a lot of people down. It was an extremely traumatic time for everyone in our business. Then along came JobKeeper and the Public Interest News Gathering program. And I can tell you now that without JobKeeper particularly, but without those two initiatives, ACM could well have gone broke. would likely have gone broke. When you're talking about a salary bill per week that's in seven figures and your revenue just dries up, you make some very quick decisions. So I'm aware that there's a feeling, certainly a feeling among communities, where we've had to suspend publications and certainly suggestions more broadly that we've abandoned communities. And one of the points that we make in our submission is we didn't make a decision to abandon communities. We made a decision to save our business. And it grieves us that we don't have the opportunity to publish all the newspapers we once had. We're publishers. We love publishing. We love bringing news to local communities, and that's what our journos live for. But those publications have to have a revenue model that underpins them. They have to be profitable. So COVID was the thing that pushed us a little over the edge. With regard to the titles that we suspended and the titles that we brought back, under the Public Interest News Gathering grant that we received, as you said, circa $10 million, we were obligated to return 91 publications in print and digital, and that was clearly set out. So how did we arrive at the 91? Well, we looked at our portfolio and we said there's a slice of those that even with funding we can't see ourselves being able to resuscitate. Then there's 91 of those that we'll apply for funding for. We received that funding, and as things then progressed, happily, we were actually able to bring back more than we were obligated to under the grant. So we actually brought back more than 100 in print and digital. There were some print titles that we didn't apply for the PING grant for that we actually managed to bring back. So as far as we're concerned, PING was vital to us, and we've met our obligations.
Thanks, Rod. And Hugh, ABC Rural Regional and Emergency began the year by cutting long-standing breakfast radio programs in regional Victoria by an hour and amalgamating several of the regional morning programs to a single statewide morning program. And that was criticised by the Sydney Morning Herald as not leading to a loss of jobs per se, but a loss of locally focused services, which were replaced by city voices at a time when regional communities have poorer internet access, so they're not necessarily picking up those digital titles. How would you answer that criticism?
Well, they're not city voices. It's a regional mornings program. It did replace four hourly morning programs with a two-hour statewide morning program in Victoria. Look, the reality is with those morning shows that we see a drop-off in numbers after breakfast, and then it doesn't really come back again until late in the afternoon. And what we're trying to do is consolidate the quality, make sure we've got the best possible program. All of the people working on those individual programs are working on the mornings program. And as you said, there's no job losses. The localised or the voices coming from regional Victoria are there every day, every week. I was listening to it on the Hume Highway coming down from Wagga this morning. Great calls in from Mildura, from Wonthaggi, from all across the state on a range of topics. It's the new program is really working well. It's a vibrant, lively morning show that leads into the World Today and the Country Hour really nicely. So yes, there was change, and change is not easy, but we think that that's actually been a successful new program. I actually thought you were going to ask about the Page Institute survey from a couple of weeks ago, but I won't go there if you don't want to.
I actually would, but probably we don't have time now. I'm just looking at
time,
and I've got my little wind up there via my phone. So I want to head into questions, but I think I'll just do one quick future casting question for all of you just quickly before we get to those comments. Looking to the future, I just want a quick snapshot from each of you. How many young journalists are you hiring, and what kind of things are you hiring them to do? Tell us about this situation. Are you hiring many? What kind of training and support is in place for them? What sorts of jobs do you no longer hire for as well as your business changes? Any one of you can go first. Don't mind.
Look, I'll jump in quickly. We've had a trainee program running for the last couple of years. after having a few years without it. It's a great introduction, or it's a great way of bringing in young talent into the organisation. They get a comprehensive year of training across a range of content, journalistic output modes, production modes. They work in regional and rural. And just this year, we're introducing a disability trainee as well, who's a brilliant young woman who's going to be working out at Ballarat in Melbourne. So, look, I'm really, really excited about the young trainees we can bring into the ABC. But then there are younger, new sort of early career reporters, and they get a lot of support, a lot of training as well. Just interesting observation I'll quickly make before I hand over to Stella and Rod. In a recruitment sense, it's actually been hard to get mid-career reporters in the last few years because the industry's kind of been hollowed out. And that is a big loss that is actually kind of an invisible problem. It's not invisible to hiring managers and people in newsrooms, but it's not spoken about a lot. There's been some research done on this in the last few years, but it is a serious issue from an ongoing point of view in terms of how those mentoring opportunities, which we all saw in our early days in the industry, are less and less easy to achieve.
Just before we go to everybody else for responses on that point that you raise, there would be plenty of journalists who have received redundancies in recent years who have been at the end of all of these organisations trying to stay afloat, keeping your businesses viable and cutting where you can. Is this a product of your own actions over the last few years that you don't have that middle layer of experienced journalists and frontline editors anymore?
I'll let Stella answer that.
Yeah, I'd like to say that we have a mix. Only last week did we recruit a news director. I'm looking for a senior state producer. We've got mid-range entry level journalist positions, camera operator positions, startup, straight out of university positions. We've got a mix. I'd like to think that we're hanging on to some of our more senior people, and that has come as a direct result of COVID and people not wanting to work in the city or not necessarily having to work in the city anymore, which is great. We've got a broad section of experience in across WinNews. However, getting them straight out of uni and training them is always going to be that difficult part, and that is hitting the ground running and ensuring that they've got the tools needed to do the job as soon as they start. So there's, you know, there's support, there's mentoring, there's guiding, there's all of that. But we're seeing many, many entry levels in terms of journalism here at WinNews, and, you know, looking for a state producer right now.
Yeah, I hear what Hugh's saying around recruitment. I'm finding that really challenging at the moment, particularly at some of the outer edges of our world. The COVID overlay there has made it really challenging. People wanting to head back closer to family, and people less likely to or less inclined to work in some of the more remote areas. As far as hiring goes, training is the key there. And one of the most exciting hires we've had recently is our training editor, Saffron Howden, one of Australia's best journalism educators, and she's come on board and put together a fantastic program for us. So I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about our new crop of trainees that I think are in week two or three of their new career. But it's not just trainees. It's as Stella says, a mix of experience that we're looking for. We're not just looking for juniors. We're looking for people right across the spectrum. But we are certainly hiring in the areas of or have been hiring in the areas of audience engagement, video, audio. So those are the sorts of skills that we're looking to bring in. And actually, we've got a new starter, a trainee at the Canberra Times, who did one of her first stories the other day, and without too much instruction, came back with the print piece, the digital piece, the video, the whole package. So it was an indication to me of the skills that we're bringing in, ready made.
Hope that answers your questioner about the opportunities for reporters in regional areas who are not necessarily young. What are you doing to keep your current crop of journalists across the new skills that are required? I mean, once upon a time, you only had to be a print journalist or a radio journalist or a TV journalist. I mean, these days, you need to be able to turn your hand to all of those plus a range of digital skills as well. What are you doing to look after your current workforce?
Is that one for me? So
all of you. You start, Rob.
Okay. Right ahead. Yeah, well, it comes back to that training piece. You know, we Saffron's put together a fantastic curriculum for the year, and it's being committed, I think, to bringing not just junior and early career journalists through, but mid-career and senior journalists and indeed editors through some of these training programs. We're also taking part in the Digital News Academy that's recently been set up by Google News Corp and with a bit of input from us. So I think it's that training right across the board. And I think if I'm honest with myself, in recent years, we haven't been great at that because it's just been pretty existential. But I'm glad now that we're well established on that path.
Stella, what about you?
Yeah, well, I'll be honest, and they're teaching me. Yes, we need to look at the digital world and ensure that that is pointing to our news, and it always goes back to eyeballs at 5:30. So it's a promotional tool, if anything. Anything that we do in that sense is always going to point back to our bulletins. But there are always training and on the job training that happens in all of our bureaus, and we're very supportive in that way. I find that media law is lacking when journalists come to us. That's a problem that we are constantly having to address with new journalists and young journalists coming to us, that the world is different. And they are very prolific on social media, and there are things that we need to address as soon as they start. So that all comes on the job, and the news directors across the states and the state producers and the two ICs all work together to ensure that we've got a good handle on that, and that all journalists are supported and all staff across news are supported that way.
And Hugh, for your existing journalists?
Yeah, look, training is a big part of what happens at the ABC. All constantly from introduction through to management level as well. We are obviously trying very hard all the time to maintain levels of quality, and that is a big focus. But one of the things I think is worth just mentioning in recent times has been training on new technology as it evolves and as we're trying to develop new ways of storytelling. So we're doing a fair bit at the moment with mobile video shooting. That's not new from an industry point of view, but because the changes in mobile phone technology and devices has been constant, you have to keep updating the techniques and the shooting and the editing approach. So we do a lot on that. We're also really experimenting with new platforms or emerging platforms from a storytelling point of view, and just thinking about what's the right way to tell a story, whether it's for a digital article, but Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, less so Twitter these days, but Instagram and TikTok are a bit of a focus at the moment. So there's different storytelling modes and training that accompanies that is something that we do a lot of as well.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, Hugh, and this goes to another question that we have from the audience. And so I might just go to Stella and Rod with this. But what are your own organisations doing to attract younger audiences to your regional product?
Well, I'll start by saying that regional Australia is so diverse, and it's not just an ageing population. In fact, we've got, you know, more and more young families being lured to regional areas for job prospects, for standard of living and things like that. But there's always going to be those infrastructure problems. There's always going to be the need for more hospitals, for more schools to get those young families established, part of those communities. So with that comes also the lure of journalists to those positions and reporting on those issues. So when you look at the geography, the demographics of who is living in the regions and who is living in the bigger cities and even the smaller cities, there's been a massive change and a massive shift, and much of it due to COVID also. So with that comes a different set of skills and that's needed to report on those issues. But it's always going to come down to the things that matter to the communities, the stories that matter. We need to speak to the people. We need to hear them. They need to have a voice. Our regional audiences need to be heard. So as much as we're reporting and telling them what needs to be heard in those communities, they're coming to us with the issues that matter. And with that comes a different audience.
Okay, Rod.
Look, I think you've got to meet the audience where they are. That's part of it for us. And that means that we don't necessarily think about it in terms of publishing to print or publishing to a website. We need to think about other channels and platforms. And if that means that some of our younger audience comes to us via Instagram or TikTok or even emerging platforms and channels, then we've got to be prepared to meet them where they are.
A quick question for each of you now, and I'm just going to sort of pass this a little bit. I've been trying to do that with the questions. Somebody raises community broadcasting as a critical part of ecosystems in regional communities. In short, each of you in your businesses, do you have an interest in some sort of cooperative tie-up with your local community not-for-profit broadcasters? And yes, no, haven't thought about it, not interested.
Yes, quick have vote. Thought about it. Very interested, looking and interested in ways of managing that. That's actually manageable because we can't be in 500 different places at once. So, yes, in broad terms, qualified by how. That's where we put it from an ABC regional point of view.
Thanks, Rod.
Haven't thought about it, but wouldn't rule it out.
Okay, Stella.
Open for discussion always.
Okay, good. In the last couple of minutes that we have left, we have 2 minutes left in this session, so I'd like to finish on a high note. Regional excellence. Can you each give me an example of a recent story or initiative that you're very proud of that you want people who are on this session today to go and check out once we're finished with the session? You can go first, Stella.
Oh, my goodness. That's every single day of the week. I've got the most hardworking team, passionate about regional news, passionate about telling the stories that matter. We've got series on and specials on 60-year anniversaries of most quirkiest of human interest stories to the most...
Pick one, Stella.
Oh, my goodness, that's so difficult. Just recently, it's going to be some of the anniversary of the unfortunate disasters, and you know, when it comes to the Tatra fires, when it comes to the Toowoomba floods, when it comes to things that have really affected the communities, way too many. But we are working on something really special in Victoria at the moment, the 60th anniversary of our existence as well, and we've got some beautiful archival footage of some of the stories that we've told down there, and it's all part of our history, it's part of our fabric. And that they're the specials that we hold on to dearly, is coming back and revisiting those communities and revisiting those stories. And, look, anything that happens out of Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane and the capital cities, it's us. So, right. You know, we're part of it.
Got it. So we'll look out for that special in Victoria coming up very soon. Something that you'd like everyone to have a look at, Rod?
I'm going to have three, Andrea. Sorry, I'm greedy. I'll direct people to the Canberra Times website. Have a look at the video that Steve Evans did, recounting the masterful video, recounting his time on 9/11 when he was in the towers in New York as things were happening. Also have a look at the link to the Forgotten River project, where we sent a team to look at the Darling Barker River and its associated communities, the link on the Canberra Times website. And finally, there's another link there, Silent Assassin, big project on type 2 diabetes. This is the hidden pandemic, if you like, and there's oodles of stuff there that can help people to change their lives and perhaps even save their lives.
Thanks, Rod. A couple of recommendations there, Hugh. What would you like to point us to?
Look, there's always heaps and heaps and heaps, but Master Dogs. Everybody's got to watch Master Dogs. It's absolutely brilliant, and it's so regional. It's just wonderful show. Check it out.
Thank you. Look, I feel like we've only just scratched the surface here, but I really want to thank each of you for the time that you've given today for the Regional Journalism Summit. Stella Laurie from WIN News, Hugh Martin from ABC Regional Rural and Emergency, and Rod Quinn from Australian Community Media. Thank you all very, very much for your time today.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andrea.
You've been listening to Walkley Talks podcast with me, James Gorman. You can find links to the stories mentioned in this discussion in the show notes. Sign up to our newsletter at walkleys.com/subscribe to be the first to learn about our new episodes, events, and other opportunities. If you've enjoyed this episode of Walkley Talks, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favourite podcast app. And while you're there, please take a moment to rate us. This podcast is produced by Andrew Herlinger with help from the 2SER Studio in Sydney, Australia.